Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host Alexander Gungi-Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan, and we're back. It's League's Cup break, you want to call it a break? Certainly hasn't felt like a break. Been impressed by the intensity of the level of games across both leagues, and certainly the Whitecaps showing a bit more fight in League's Cup than we expected. But certainly that is the secondary news from a Vancouver Whitecaps perspective. I mean, where to start? Been a pretty good week for the Whitecaps. I mean, if you want to go in terms of trophy winning, in League One BC, the women's team did end up claiming a regular season crown. Both women and men's team are in the finals at BC Place this weekend. And they also claimed the Juan de Fuca plate as the highest joint League One BC men's and women's point. So certainly if you want silverware, pretty good week for the Whitecaps on that front. CPL continues on, but let's not bury the lead. Two Canadian internationals are coming to the Vancouver Whitecaps. Richie Larea, completely out of nowhere, signed to a loan to the Whitecaps. Huge ad. How many times we sat here talking fullback depth, fullback depth, fullback depth. You go sign a Canadian international, started at the World Cup, who has been tearing apart MLS. It's a contracted Premier League player too, it's worth noting. And then, just for good measure, one Canadian international fullback wasn't enough. Axel Schuster was so nice, he had to do it twice. He got Sam Adekugbe as well. And a permanent deal. The Academy boy returns home after his travels to Europe, a Turkish league champion now, stints in England, stints in Norway. What a story that is. Permanent deal. A left back, hugely needed. Fullback we've talked about, but it was really always a left back specifically was so desperately needed. They've now caught it. So, I mean, lots to talk about this week, Sam. I mean, we're going to lead off with the transfers. But before we do, I mean, how's your League's Cup break slash, interlude been other than all the hoopla?
Yeah, well, in news that absolutely no one cares about, I submitted my research for my master's, so at least that's out of the way. And then I've been kind of chilling this week, and all of a sudden yesterday, the phone's going crazy with all this transfer news. We thought there were whispers that Sam Adekugbe was out there in the wind and that he might be coming to Vancouver, especially when Julian Gressel departed the club for Columbus. But the Richie Larea one for me was really from the top rope. Like, that was not something I was expecting. Just Vanni Sartini, I can just imagine him in his office just rubbing his palms together, licking his lips. He would play, someone said it was a great comment, Vanny would play 11 wingbacks if he could. Like, that's, it really seems like Vanny Sartini's ideal player. And now they have two of them to fill those roles. As you said, Alex, we've been talking about the need for depth. We've also been talking about how demanding Sartini's system is on those players, and they don't have the horses to match up. Well, now they have the horses, and we've seen these guys. What's crazy is, well, not crazy, it makes a lot of sense, but we've seen these guys perform for Canada in the same team in a very similar role. And so it's very interesting now that we're going to get to see it again in Vancouver. What does it mean for the rest of the season? What does it mean beyond? We're going to dive into all of that. So, man, fantastic. Fantastic show setting up here. I can't wait to dive.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to unpack there. I mean, yeah, just two Canadian internationals. That's, yeah, the big one for me. I mean, look, it's one of those where certainly it's interesting to see, because I don't think anyone expected it. I mean, after how good Larea has been in MLS, you kind of expected, almost wanted him from a Canadian perspective to go back to Europe and give it a go. you know, ditto with that at Kugby, the fact that he got that taste of Galatasaray, kind of wanted him to stick around, but also for the Whitecaps, these are huge signings, right? And even just the general commentary of these sorts of moves, I saw like mixed sentiment on it, in the sense that everyone from a Whitecaps perspective, this is a win, no doubt. Like two Canadian internationals at a World Cup. Like you just look at the marketing perspective, the, you know, we talk all the time about the Caps maybe struggling to get some marketable players. All of a sudden you look across this squad, you got Gold, you got Kubas, you know, you've got someone like an Ali Ahmed in the sense, the young rising Canadian. Now you got two Canadians who are starting games at the World Cup where so many, you know, people were watching. Those are recognizable names like, oh, Adekugbe, Larea. But yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because I think, honestly, I think we might be ending up seeing a lot more of these moves in the next few years as well. I just think as a general commentary of MLS, that's kind of been a thought I've had seeing this. It's, yeah, if all of a sudden with this Messi effect, I think now for MLS, they're going to want to push to get national team stars home. I mean, we saw those reports, kind of unfounded, but like, it's kind of the vibe I got. It's like when Pulisic, right, looking for a new club, and you saw rumors being like, oh, he's not going to go to MLS now, but MLS is pushing to get him within the next 3-4 years. That might make sense as kind of that next chapter was, okay, Messi's in, some of these other players in, get these players in their prime, especially national team players who can come and be marketable and grow the standard of the league, especially with all these young South Americans, all these young, more and more players in their prime. And I think it's an interesting shift for MLS that, yeah, in a window where Messi comes in, that the Whitecaps make two moves like this as well. Like it's about an intent of keeping up with the sort of spending that, you know, a club like Miami's doing. Of course, very different players, right? You're not going to compare a window of Messi, Busquets, you know, Alba and Iniesta versus Adekugbe, Larea, but it's kind of one of those where it's like they both improved the standard of the league in different ways. And I just think it's, yeah, I think that's one of the fascinating aspects of it for me, that because, yeah, look, we knew what the Whitecaps needed. We knew they needed fullbacks, maybe a center back. Sounds like they could also be completing a move that helps shore up depth at that position. We'll get to that later. But yeah, I mean, it's just more the caliber of players that stood out. And I think that's the biggest thing of this move. It's not the fact that the Whitecaps made moves. I think that's something where you kind of always felt that was coming, especially Julian Gressel comes out. You're wondering, like, is this going to be a trade for some, you know, an MLS backup fullback who you feel could get a bigger role? Or, you know, you kind of go the proverbial bargain bin, as the kind of the Whitecaps have had over the last few years. And, you know, I say that with not in a bad way, because they've done well to go through that bargain bin and get some good players. But yeah, for them really to go out and after an Adekugbe, Larea, that's the big thing for me that stands out, because that's just, you can see the sentiment of the Whitecaps supporter on Twitter. It was like almost surprised, like the Whitecaps did that. Like that's almost a movie you expect from a Toronto FC or another club, and for the Whitecaps to be doing it, it shows how the tides are shifting in so many regards.
I think what's really interesting for me, and I thought this immediately as these moves were coming out yesterday, is that this is absolutely like a pushing all the poker chips into the middle of the table by Axel Schuster, because these guys are, they're fantastic players. We can wax poetic all day about how they're going to improve the squad. Like, it's going to be fun to watch the rest of the season. It's going to be fun to watch next year as well, provided they get the Larea deal done permanently. But these are players who are 28, going to both turn 29 before the start of next season. So there's no time like the present. And we've already talked about this with the way the organization behaved with adding Julian Gressel, bringing in Alessandro Schopp, like angling a little bit, even Takaoka at 26, angling a little bit more towards players that are ready now than some of the guys they brought in previously, like a Deber Caicedo that was sort of like a draft and stash type, you know, incubate him for a couple of years and hope that he gets to the type of player you want him to be. With Deber, it never ended up happening. But the Whitecaps aren't looking to make those kinds of moves right now. Like, I even wonder, you know, in their current position, obviously they're very happy they brought in Pedro Vite, but like they're probably not looking to add another Pedro Vite type acquisition at the moment. Like, that's not what's on the radar. What's on the radar is legitimate, proven, plug and play talents that, you know, Sam Adekugbe and Richie Larea, like, there's no question about their ability to perform and produce at the MLS level. Like, they're going to be able to do that. The more interesting or the more unknown is how does this flesh out long-term for the club? And, you know, I think that ultimately it's going to be fantastic for the rest of the season. It will be fantastic in 2024. At the moment, 2025, 2026, how it's all going to look come that time, it is very much, you know, a wait and see. And maybe Axel Schuster and Vanni Sartini are thinking, yeah, who cares about 2025 and 2026 right now? We have a good core. We have a good team. And, you know, we need some finishing touches to really get the most out of it. And that's what Larrea and Adekubi, to me, they feel like they're, you know, adding that little bit of, we talked before on the podcast about, you know, building rosters like a recipe, right? And, you know, this is, they got the tomatoes, the onions, they've got all like the foundational ingredients. They were looking for some spice, some seasoning, something to just like cap it off. And at a position, as we've talked about, that, you know, is really crucial in a lot of ways to this team getting the most out of their potential. And so now they found a way to do it. We'll dive maybe a little bit more specifically. We chat about Larrea. We can talk about like the roster construction, opportunity cost angle that's going on there and whether or not he's going to be on a designated player contract, what designated player contracts even are going to mean down the line in MLS. That's all interesting to dive into. But the one thing that's undoubtable is, man, for 2023, 2024, this team's going to be fun to watch. And I think that's fantastic, as you said, not just because good product on the pitch gets fan buy-in, but these are also likable, recognizable guys that Vancouver Whitecaps supporters are already, they already have a relationship they're already familiar with to some degree. So just, it makes that part of it so much easier too. Supporters don't have to learn about these guys. They can go to the stadium and cheer on players they already know and love from the men's national team.
Yeah, and I mean, the marketability, again, it's key because, I mean, Ryan Gauld, he's a grinder in the sense that, like, you know, he's, of course, very supremely talented, and we've seen the results Gauld's gotten, but he's kind of a grinder, and Whitecaps fans have fallen in love with that work ethic, right? Kubas as well, just head down grinder. You add in a guy like Sam Adekugbe, I mean, just supremely humble. We've seen it with his time, even in Turkey, just what he's dealt with the past year and how he's gone through that, and just that humility he's always brought. You had in Richie Larrea as well, like someone who's going to fight for the badge. I think Whitecaps fans will like that. We've seen for TFC that he's always going to stick up for his teammates. He's always going to, you know, give 150% on the field. So yeah, I mean, supremely, it's just this core. I think really this core is, it's built up so nicely. And I think what's key is you mentioned 23 and 24. What's nice is that kind of gives time for projects like the second team in League One BC to really take form and to really push some of those young kids we've been asking and wanting for, while at least also with time like this, by building up a core and really building up this identity that's been brewing over a couple of years, it'll really buy time for some of these guys to embed in. And, you know, we talk so much, like, just to throw an example, like Germa Spankoff at the second team level, 19-year-old fullback, first year pro with MLS Next Pro, looking great. Well, it's going to help as he eases his transition towards the first team that, okay, who he was mentoring you at left back? Sam Adekugbe, former Whitecaps Academy guy, you know, Turkish champion, World Cup participant. That's just going to only help you at that position. You look at all the million right backs the Whitecaps have, assuming Richie Larrea stays. Like, it's nice, even for a guy like, of course, Ryan Raposo, who's, you know, at the position, but even any of the ones in the academy, like an Elaj Ba, like, all right, you're learning from Larrea, someone who, you know, fought for everything, went from cut at Orlando as a midfielder to becoming a fullback, learning the trade, making the national team, going to Nottingham Forest, playing at a World Cup, going up against world-class players and holding your own. Like, I think that's also just huge for that. I mean, we also know what Kubas and Gauld will do for at their respective positions. So yeah, I think it's huge for the club as well. Like, and the prime thing you mentioned is key because, well, this year is going to be crucial, no doubt. I think with this playoff format, the Whitecaps have no excuse not to make it in and not to make it in at a good seed, and they can certainly go on a run. All of that's great. they're all set up, etc. But even next year, there's almost more opportunity because so many of these players are committed to next year, like pretty much everyone except Larea, right? And even Larea, you know, sounds based on, you know, the math and the numbers going around, it sounds like it's very plausible. That's huge, because what's next year? You got, you know, the CONCACAF Champions Cup next year, and the Whitecaps got a taste this year, and they're going to want to make a run next year and, you know, prove that this year was a bit of a learning moment, and so many of the players from this year will run it back. You look at MLS, a chance to really get on a strong start and continue through that, and maybe, you know, do better there. Canadian Championship to defend your crown, make it three in a row. Plus, all of a sudden, it helps next year, you know, not to look too far ahead, but, you know, say everyone stays around. If you want to start three Canadians, you got Ali Ahmed, Sam Adegbuyi, Richie Larea. That's not going to be the worst option in the world. And yeah, so there's so much to look forward to then. And from there, hopefully that can, that embedding process can help also youngsters come up. So yeah, that's even without diving into the fit of these players, which I'm sure we should and we will do. I mean, Sam Adekugbe, Richie Larea, where do they fit in the lineup? It should be pretty seamlessly, but even just, yeah, off the field, there's so many factors that make these moves a win, which is nice to see.
Well, yeah, it's funny because the system does fit them so well that it's not like a big mystery where these guys are going to slot in, right? One thing we should talk about in terms of specifics, and probably no time like the present to dive into, is the Richie Larea contract extension situation. Because with Adekugbe, he's going to be a TAM player. That seems a little more straightforward, right? But with Richie, there's been a lot of talk about him being a designated player for Vancouver at the conclusion of his, you know, Nottingham Forest deal, and if they're able to make that permanent. So we were chatting a bit about this before the show, doing some napkin math, reading some stuff on Twitter, chatting on Twitter. So Alex, you always have such a good handle on all the permutations of MLS roster juggling. So just run us through a little bit. What does Richie potentially being a designated player look like for Vancouver? What, you know, is that a bad thing? Is that an okay thing? Like, what, you know, where should we all net out on this? Because I've seen so many different things floating around.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly some quite the roster gymnastics to get this all done. But yeah, I think what we saw is that Rheingold's a DP that we know. And then based on what we know from this year, Sergio Cordova is a DP and Andres Cubas. What we knew from last year is that, I mean, those were pretty much the three DPs, sub out Cordova for Cavallini. But what we knew is one of them was buy downable, and that was Cubas, because they had three U22 players, Kyle Alexandre, Daber Caicedo, and Pedro Vite. So that's how they're able to get all those out. But then all of a sudden off the offseason, Alexandre is gone. Now the big one as well is Caicedo going out on loan. And that's one, well, we didn't mention, but for those who haven't been paying attention, Daber Caicedo has headed out on loan back to Colombia, option to buy as well. So, I mean, it's hard to imagine a scenario where he's coming back. And the math indicates that, because thing is, when you have one U22 player, it means you can get three senior DPs, whereas if you have three U22 players, you can get two senior DPs plus a U23 DP, or of course Max Tam DP. So now all of a sudden the Whitecaps freed up some DP spots, so the math works. I mean, I think Gold is the one where we're sure that he's going to be a DP. Then I wasn't sure about Sergio Cordova. So hat tip to JJ Adams on this one. He says that the plan is to buy down Cordova. And based on the napkin math, it's actually very plausible, because the Max Tam threshold's right around 1.6, 1.7 million. Of course, due to Cordova coming in on a transfer, his fee has to be amortized, or however the heck you say that, across the length of his deal, which is 3 years. Basically what that means is, he makes around 1 million. The transfer fee was around 2 million. He is like right in around the TAM threshold. So he could get bought down and Larea could come in, because Sam Adekugbe is also not a DP, which is great. He probably didn't cost more than a million, because that was the option had a spore, had to Galatasaray to buy Adekugbe when he went out on loan. Can't imagine it was much more than that. And it's salary probably not much more than a million. So he makes sense under the cap. So yeah, I think it's something where, because of all that, Larea, A, if he comes in as a DP, there's also a chance he's also buy downable, because also the math on him is he's not likely to cost more than 1.5 million. I don't think TFC sold him to Nottingham for around 1 million. He hasn't really played at Nottingham. He's been on MLS loan. They'd be hard to imagine they're haggling for much more than 1 or 1.5 million. He currently makes 1.2. I think it is at TFC, which is a bit on the pricey side, especially we're not sure if that's the full amount. Because you know how loans are, you end up usually eating a percentage of the loan, but it's also possible TFC just ate the full thing to get him in on a year deal. So really, based on his math, he could be a DP, he could not. But anyways, I think it's one it also works out, because a lot of the chatter about Richie Larea going back to TFC as a DP is that it makes no sense. There's so much instability around Lorenzo Insigne, Federico Bernardeschi. Will they stay? Will they go? Are they the right DPs, etc.? That if Larea was being made a DP, he would likely be the face of the team. And as we know, in MLS, fullbacks, wingbacks, that doesn't really happen very often. Whereas for the Whitecaps, I think it's something where if the mathematics indicate that Larea has to be a DP, that's the only way to fit him in. I don't think it's the worst scenario in the world, because this is Gold's team. This is Gold and Kubas' team, really, I should say. And even beyond that, you're getting enough value from elsewhere in the lineup, like Veselinovic, Blackman, Takaoka, Sam Adekugbe coming in on a non-TP deal. The fact that you're able, I mean, you know, he's someone who would be interested to see his future, like a Schopf. The fact you're able to get a Schopf-like player on a non-DP deal, Ali Ahmed, Pedro Vite, like there's enough pieces around where the Whitecaps needed so much. They needed upgrades at fullback significantly enough where Larea being on a DP deal isn't also the worst thing in the world, because he'd be the third DP. There's it's likely he's close to whereabouts the TAM threshold anyways. And the last factor to throw at everyone in all this, and I think why it's interesting the Whitecaps have kind of gone aggressive like this, and you know, bringing Larea on a loan as well could work. The MLS rules are about to change. I think that feels almost like an open secret at this point with all the Messi and friends situation in Miami. So the fact the Whitecaps are kind of getting in and bolstering their lineup, it feels like we're months away. This is just me speculating. Don't take any of this at face value. But from there being a fourth DP or a fifth DP or, you know, more salary. And I think all of a sudden, if you have four or five DPs, Larea being one of them makes a lot more sense, right? Or if the salary caps goes up and Larea is pushing that DP amount, it makes a lot more sense. So I think it's one of those where, yeah, it's something where you see at first it's shock value, like Richie Larea DP, like, ooh, okay, like a fullback as a DP. We've seen that before. But I think it's also one where, based on other circumstances, it isn't as wild as when you kind of dive into all the moving pieces.
Well, and it can be as simple as this, right? Like Sergio Cordova has been designated player this season. And, you know, ultimately, how much has that really hurt the Whitecaps? Like a little bit, but not a ton. With Richie, yes, is that like value maximization under the current roster rules? Like maybe not quite, but it's certainly a heck of a lot more maximizing that slot than they've been doing with Cordova this season. And all the stuff you just laid out, I think that the landscape is changing. One thing I wanted to say too, like often I talk a lot about like player age, and we look at kind of the arc and stuff like that. And I could see how, you know, there is reason to be cautious with these guys getting up there, that, you know, their best football, if not right now, is, you know, very close to being behind them. But I do think there's something about the timing of these signings I really like for the Whitecaps. And that is the fact that it's not in like the immediate lead up or like post World Cup rush, where, you know, one player pops off at the World Cup and now all of a sudden, you know, he was worth 500K, but now he's worth 5 mil because he had two good matches at the World Cup, right? And you see this happen all the time. With Richie and Sam, you know, as good as they are as players, it's like the market didn't maybe get the massive move they were looking for personally, or, you know, Richie never settled at Forest. Sam, either chose he didn't want to stay in Turkey, or that situation just never quite clarified the way he wanted it to. So the Whitecaps are kind of taking this opportunity where these guys, in another world, Larea's you know, killing it in the championship for Nottingham, or maybe on one of the lower Premier League sides. Sam Adekubi's got, you know, a deal in Europe, and those guys are having tons of success. But because for whatever reason that didn't quite pan out for those players, now the Whitecaps have this great opportunity to swoop in and be like, well, we'll, you know, the place they're going to enjoy playing in front of, you know, Canadian fans, going to get well compensated, going to be in a nice location for the national team in 2026. It all kind of fits and works out. And it doesn't feel like it's not Lucas Cavallini where they're sort of like buying at the height of the hype. I feel like with Adekubi and Larea, there's already been hype, and that hype might've been higher even a year ago than it is now. And now they're buying these players at like a sensible level where you know what kind of production you're going to get, you know, the relative risks, but you're happy with that. And so I really like, these acquisitions from that respect, where it doesn't feel reactionary or buying at the absolute height of the stock. I still, despite their older players, the windows may be limited, I think they've still been very sensible.
And again, it's fit, right? Like with Cavallini, the caveat with Cavallini was, ooh, good signing.
Well, who's,
is it the right?
Like, who's going to provide service? It was Cavallini and no one else.
There was no Gold. There was no, you know, winger. It was just like, okay, it's just going to be Cavallinian vibes. Whereas, yeah, I think that kind of leads nicely to the next point is Whitecaps all of a sudden got a pretty decent little best 11. And it's, I mean, all of a sudden as well, the competition at the best 11. I mean, we can ask ourselves a question too. Are they going to play a back three or are they going to play a back four? Right. Are they going to go a little more top heavy? Right. Do you trust, how much do you trust Adekugbe and Larea in a back four? I'd trust them plenty. Or do you go put them in a back three and just completely take the reins off, which could also be exciting, right? Just Larea running down the right on a back three and then Adekugbe whipping in service from the left on in a similar formation. I mean, we can certainly dive into that. But yeah, I think it's, for me, it's also the fit, right? Because Cavallini was maybe right player, wrong time kind of vibe. Like, he still produced despite being on some strangely constructed teams. But just never really got service. All of a sudden you're looking at this team and it's, you got your 10, you got your six, you got two nines, you got three nines, arguably with, you know, the, between the White and Cordova and Betcher, you got two tens. Now you got midfield. Really, it was how often did we sat here after games like, oh, the Whitecaps, man, they just need to do something at fullback. And I think the fact that they, again, it's for me, it's the addressing of the need that's also so key in this, where it's, yeah, you could look at the factors, you know, and I think those factors would have mattered more in a different circumstance. And again, it goes back to my Larea TFC discussion. Does Larea make sense as a TFC DP now? Probably not, just because it's something where, again, he's something where if you're trying to be, they need centerpieces there in TFC, right? Like they need to figure out what their DP situation is. They need to figure out what they are. Their roster feels like it's about to get blown up again. Whereas the Whitecaps, again, there's that stability. You know what this core is. This core is going nowhere. They all have been signed through 24, 25, 26. And now these are just finishing pieces, right? It's, the cake's been made. You're just putting the cherries on top, right? You're not taking the cherries and trying to put them on when you haven't even started mixing the flour and the egg together, right? Like, it's, if we're going back to the cooking or the bacon. So yeah, I think that's also a big difference. But I mean, yeah, I think we've talked a lot about the sociological influence of these moves. There's no doubt it's big on a lot of those fronts. But I mean, Sam, do we want to kind of dive into where this leaves the Whitecaps, you know, best 11 right now? I mean, based on the fact that we know these two are in, Gressel's gone now, Diver Caicedo's out, Ranko's extended, so he's not going anywhere. To be fair, I think the transfer window is still open in terms of departures, so there could probably still be some moves out. I mean, it feels like the writing's a bit on the wall for a Jevane Brown, for example, based on just some of these moves and the chatter that has been there. But for the most part, we know what this team is for the rest of the season. And I mean, yeah, do we kind of want to dive into that, especially the debate? Do you think it'll be a 3-5-2 or do you think it'll be a 4-3-2-1?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting part, right? Like, to me, it's basically, okay, so, you know, just if we're going to go through the whole process, Yoyi Takaoka in goal, Ranko Veselinovic will be playing at center back. Tristan Blackman, you'd think, whether it's a back three or a back four, will be playing alongside him. The question is, you know, can they still get value out of Matias Laborda? does having better fullbacks unlock something in Laborda we haven't seen? Does Luis Martin still figure in as a center back? Like, he's not going to be a fullback, but maybe Vanni Sartini thinks he can be a center back. I don't know. This is obviously not something I'm advocating for, but I just, hey, it's out there. Martins is under contract. So I have to think, you know, they want to get some, they surely want to get better value out of Matias Laborda. And I do think Vanny, ultimately, he's Italian. He wants to play three at the back. Like, that is his goal. I get the sense that he's gone in a different direction because he's felt like he had to with the players available, or he's just not quite had the system down the way he wanted. But I have to think that ultimately, Takoka and goal, Ranko, Blackman, and Laborda flanking, and then obviously Larea and Adekubi as your wing backs. Now, in the midfield, I think it's interesting. I mean, Kubas, you have to pencil in. Ali Ahmed.
Penin.
What's that? Penin, exactly.
Kubas, you're tattooing. Yeah, you're tattooing that one in.
Yeah. You know, Kubas and Ahmed in the midfield, Gold and Brian White up front, and then you've kind of got your bizarro space, right? Like, that's the last piece of the roster is kind of, you know, what role does Pedro Vite have to play? Alessandro Schopf, can we see more out of Alessandro Schopf? Does having better fullbacks take some of the stress off Schopf that he doesn't have to do everything? He can just focus on his specific role. I think that's where it's that final kind of midfield spot or the center back situation, depending on their shape. Those are things Vanni Sartini can look to tweak. But I do feel like there you've got, you know, 9-10 players on the roster that you're not only for this season, but probably for next season as well. Like, they're all under contract. You're pretty happy with all of them. And I see that being the core they're going with. It's just, where those couple fringe players fit in. That's my analysis of it.
Yeah, I think the thing is with the way I see it as well, I think that's probably the best idea to keep going with that back three, especially now that you've got two like top caliber wingbacks in Adekubi and Larea. I mean, I just think especially if you can unlock Larea, he's going to be an absolute firecracker and more of a free roll. Because like we see, like TFC, he's been playing CB this year for TFC. He's been playing right back. Like, I just, you know, you kind of want to just completely let the reins go and see what he does. And even did it with that Adekubi because of the wing back. One thing maybe people will be a bit surprised with, like, yeah, he's got speed, but he's not necessarily as much as a get to the byline and cross kind of guy. He's more of a, he really specializes in the early cross, the early delivery. That's kind of why I wonder if a back four could work, in the sense that maybe you give Larea a bit of the free reins down that right side and he has the fitness to track back and maybe fill in where, you know, we've seen sometimes Whitecaps fullbacks this year get up and maybe not get down as much, whereas I don't think that'll be an issue with Larea. And then what you could also get is Adekugbe on the left side, never really straying too far forward at a time and more kind of being there for a possession option, kind of being, you know, even dropping into the back three, but then also getting forward and trying to whip in that early cross. We kind of saw him play that role for Canada, where he would almost be like Davies cover on the left side. And I wonder if we see that, just purely because if you do that.
Basically, Adekubi, I get the sense Adekubi a little bit more is like what the Whitecaps want Luis Martins to be. Whereas Richie's more your take on players 1v1, burn, you know, track meets down the right-hand side and just cause all kinds of problems. So it's like they could go back to that like asymmetrical back four thing where Richie's darting forward, Sam sort of tucks into the back three at times, right? Because they did that with Canada where they were really only playing two center backs, but Sam would tuck in and kind of form part of that back line. And so they could mess around with that. Because as you mentioned, Adekubi is not like, he's not your dribbler 1v1 stretch guys with pace as much as maybe some people think he is.
Well, he's quick. Don't get me wrong. He's got the recovery speed. He can. He's made some great runs that we've seen him for Canada, but that's not his style. I think with him, what's fascinating is that he has the technique, in my opinion. He can play in midfield if you wanted to, if you want to work at the position. Like, he's just very comfortable on the ball. He has that dexterity in his hips where, for Canada, a lot of the buildup went through that left side when Adekugbe was on the field, just because he was so comfortable in receiving the ball, finding those channels, like an Eustachio dropping into those channels. Kay, of course, because he was very prominent on that time and often played on that left side. I saw a lot of buildup plays where it would kind of be like, get it to Adekugbe. He kind of works it into a bit of a pocket. So I think, yeah, I think that's why I could see that as well, just because if you do see him at left wing back, I think it's something that will suit him, no doubt. But I also just don't think he's going to, like someone like Larea, you put him at wing back, he's just, you know what he's going to do. He's just going to be absolutely just, you know, it's going to be fascinating to watch. Whereas Adekugbe, he'll be fun to watch at wing back, but also I don't think he'll be, you know, I mean, we can see how much he's getting forward, et cetera. So I think that could also work. And I say that purely because the nice thing about the 3-5-2 is, right, yeah, you get Adekugbe, Larea at wing back, you get three center backs. My only issue, well, not issue, but my only question is kind of what do you do with the midfield and the front, especially now, because Kuba starts, but what do you do with, do you go 2-8s? Do you, you know, does the Schopf get a go? Is it Ahmed and Schopf? Well, what does that mean? It means between Gold, White, Cordova, Vite, you're playing two. You're benching two of those guys. Okay, well, then you slot Vite back. You're still benching, you know, one of Cordova, Vite, one of Cordova, Gold, White, right? That's a tough decision to make. It's not going to be Gold. So you're basically benching one of Cordova or White. If you go to that kind of 4-3-2-1 where it's Adekugbe left back, Larea right back, but then Adekugbe is kind of in his more sometimes push forward into a fullback, sometimes drop into a three, sometimes even tuck into midfield to provide support, you could then put Kubas in, you go Ahmed and Vite or Schopf if you want. I mean, well, also maybe the Schopf will certainly get a boost from all this. You go with one of those eights, then you can go the front three, right? Where if you want it to be Gold, Vite, White, Gold, Vite, Cordova, you know, Gold, Cordova, White, you have all those options presentable to you. So you're also getting more of your attackers on the field. So I do wonder if we see that, just purely because I think the back three would make sense, but also I think due to the way Adekugbe could play and, you know, the value Larea would bring on that right side. And then I think what we'll see as well is if you play Adekugbe in that left-sided role and you play Ali Ahmed as a left center mid, he kind of loves tucking out into that left side half space as a winger, right? Almost at times. You could also allow Ahmed to do that with more regularity as an eight. And it would kind of, I feel like they'd complement each other very nicely. Then Adekugbe, if need be, can provide an overlap threat.
I was going to say,
I could see something.
As you're illustrating like the Ahmed Adekugbe partnership on the left side, I'm like, ooh, I like how that is going to, in theoretically in my head, how it's going to look. It seems awesome. So you're selling me on that potential for sure.
Well, that's it. I think it's something, well, we'll see, because it's also like we've seen Vanny have a system, but also you kind of have to adapt to the players you have. And I think that's the unique thing about Adekugbe and Larea, is that they bring vastly different skill sets. And I think I'd love Larea in the back four as well, purely because what we mentioned about the back four earlier in the season, it was just like great formation. Like I love narrow formations, but for them to work, you need fullbacks to push forward. And they're just, you know, between the likes of Jivane Brown, you know, even Ryan Raposo, you know, Luis Martins, it's a demanding position, right? It's something where it's just like there's not many players in the league, in the world, who can fulfill, especially when you're playing narrow, right? When you don't even get the, like, sometimes it's nice when you're playing a 4-3-3, you just switch with the winger. You tell the winger to cover you and you go do the thing. Like when they're playing a 4-3-2-1, what are you going to do? You're going to ask Ryan Gold to cover you when you're going up? No, like you want him higher up the pitch and in the final thirds. And I think a guy like Larea can absolutely play that. So I want to see that, just because what we saw earlier in the year was just the fullback struggle to fill that up. And then, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like the Adekugbe partnership could open up wrinkles tactically where you can build in a three, but he can also get forward if you want, but you can also get Ahmed tucking over in the half space and even Adekugbe filling in for him. And it gives you something different in possession, because we've kind of seen that with Luis Martins lately, right? Like, yeah, it's been a back three, but has it really been a back three? Like, it's kind of been a bit like that anyways, where, yeah, they're playing a back three by function, but then you see Levante Johnson playing on the left wing back position anyways, right? Like, it almost makes sense for Adekugbe to be in the in quotations, left CB position with an Ahmed in that left wing back positions, where in reality, Ahmed's tucking in and Adekugbe's drying out, and then they're swapping and kind of having that fluid partnership. So I think it's something where that's probably what we'll see anyways, and it's just a matter of semantics or what they're actually going to call it. And the deployment feels like it's going to be rather similar either way.
Yeah, and I get the sense that, I mean, this has been a theme all season, and just because they brought in some fullbacks, I don't think it's going to change now. We're going to see rotation amongst the center backs. Like, Laborda's going to get some run. Blackman will get a night off every once in a while. I feel like Ranko's the only guy that match in, match out, you know he's going to be back there. And now maybe those two new fullbacks, you know that fullback, wingback, quasi-midfielder, quasi-center back, whatever, you know they're going to be involved. But the question is, how do they make all the pieces work? And as you said, I think the truth lies somewhere in between three and four at the back, almost always, right? Like, they're changing and shifting this shape regardless of whatever's put on the team sheet. But I think we're going to see variation and experimentation. Certainly if this team proceeds in League Cup, they're going to probably use this as a test space with these guys to see what they can offer, how everyone combines together best. Alex, I mean, that's a lot of Richie Larea and Sam Adekugbe talk. Obviously the two big stories. So we have to talk about, we have to lead with all of that info, but where do we want to go from here? I guess we just probably say a quick word on, I mean, we should say a word on the Ranko Veselinovic extension. Honestly, this could have been a big news story in a day that didn't have other massive bombs. We talked about it earlier in the season as Ranko could be one of the guys that's most likely to depart over the next 6 to 8 months. And now it does not look like that's happening. I think that as I said on a previous podcast, like, if Ranko was looking for a move to Europe, now would be the time. And obviously he's really enjoying life in Vancouver, enjoying life in MLS, finding a nice rhythm and seems content to stay. And I think that's good news for the Whitecaps because you want defensive consistency. This is a guy that's still young with room to improve, which sounds kind of crazy because he's such like a wily vet at a young age. But just, you know, tidy bit of business. It's tough when you don't have the exact salary figures on these extensions. You don't know how good of a deal it is with the Christian Dahomey situation. You finally see what the number is and you're like, whoa, that's a lot of money. So we'll have to see what the figure is for a guy like Ranko, but overall, this seems like a good deal, and can't complain, really. Good to just, you know, the Whitecaps probably already need another center back long term, so to lock down the one guy you're able to rely on is a good bit of business.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with Ranko, it's just a tidy bit of business all around, because certainly he's shown it. He's really taken a step forward, feels like, really this year, but even last year. Just finding his feet. And what's nice is that with a deal like this, either you keep him around and he keeps being a solid rock in MLS, and hey, anytime you sign a big deal, it means that if he is moving on, you're getting a decent little fee for him. So I think that's a win-win in that regard. And yeah, look, but it also like lines up with the idea with the Whitecaps building a core, building a team to build around kind of going forward. So I think I don't have much to say, just purely because it's one of those where it's a win-win, right? Like, you're either getting more money for him in a sale, because we always wondered if eventually he'd be sold on, or, you know, you're keeping him around long-term, which, given what he's shown, it's also never a bad thing, right? Like, it's something where you're more preparing for a sale just because his age, how long he's been in the league, you wonder if he maybe wants to go back to Europe. But now the nice thing is, when he signs a deal, you're kind of in a win-win. You're not risking a position where things drag on. All of a sudden, you know, he's a free agent. You're losing him for nothing, and he's going to Europe anyways, right? Like, you're keeping him around. I think that's a key move either way.
And then just kind of rounding out the news, I mean, we talked about, you know, Deber Caicedo. It's just kind of a shame with the injury and then the shift from Mark Dos Santos to Vanni Sartini, and the distinct lack of out and out wingers in this system. It just never seemed like a long-term fit. So that's tough for Deber. Always a fun guy around training, always really positive, and loads of potential too. So I hope that he's able to find some consistent minutes and has a good run down there in Colombia. And then Julian Gressel. I mean, it's worth pointing out that Gressel was you know, probably the Vancouver Whitecaps' most valuable player for the first half of the MLS season. Provided a ton of great service, scored a couple really nice goals, and just overall was like a pretty enjoyable guy to have around the Whitecaps for the last season, despite the difficult circumstances he came to the team. You know, DC United not even telling him where he was going as all the Wayne Rooney stuff was happening. And, you know, he had his second kid in Vancouver. Just a lot of life stuff that's happened to Gressel over the last year that he's had to deal with. And he's managed to play really well through all of that. So I hope that Gressel does well with the Crew. And then we'll see if he decides to re-sign there, if he heads somewhere else. In the off season will be interesting to track, but these additions at the deadline really dull the sting of something that could have been a big deal. If you go, well, how are we going to replace Julian Gressel's production? Now you have a pretty, you know, pretty cogent response to that, but nonetheless, I think just both with Daber and with Julian Gressel, just great guys to have around the team. Really positive on pitch contributions, and they'll be missed. Although I think everyone at this point is just full aboard the hype train for the new addition, so it's kind of been overshadowed a little bit.
Yeah, I just honestly like the way everything was handled. I think that's the big thing. I think the fact that the Whitecaps moved on from two key pieces, but were able to bring, first of all, I think the fact that I think before, if this Gressel move happens 2, 3, 4 years ago, it feels like Gressel's gone and you're not replacing him for 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years. How often do you see, oh, we're going to get this player? How long do you replace? You know, how long did it take to replace Laba, Pedro Morales, et cetera, right? Or even some of these center backs. So I think it's huge that literally Gressel's out on what it was like a Friday. And then, you know, within the next Thursday, they've already got two pretty good replacements lined up. I think that's great. I also love the way they handled the Gressel move in the sense that both parties sat down, the Whitecaps offered him a good, hefty amount of money. It ultimately wasn't down to the money. Gressel wanted to go to the East Coast. Whitecaps said, bet, we'll trade you. Both sides left amicably. I think that was nice to see, right? Like there's sometimes you see there can be animosity. The Whitecaps could have been like, oh, we'll keep you for 6 months anyways, right? Or something along those lines. And the fact that they were able to find a solution like that, like, I don't know, just you got good vibes from that move. It's like painful, as I'm sure it was for a lot of Whitecaps fans, to see a player of Gressel's caliber leave, right? That's one of your MVPs this year, talented player, very proven at MLS. It was just one of those where, yeah, look, I just thought it was handled so well between everything, right? Like the Whitecaps accommodating it, and then also the fact that you lose a U.S. men's national team, you know, MLS vet, and then you bring in a guy like Alarea who certainly fills that mold. Plus for fun, you bring in an Adekugbe to double down on that. And then even the Caicedo loan as well, like just it's no nonsense, right? Like they needed to free up a spot. Caicedo's kind of been struggling for minutes. He heads home. He gets a chance to find his feet again. Whitecaps get some roster flexibility. Like it's just, you know, no dragging out, no. Because even you feel like, for example, with the Kyle loan, where it's just like, even that was like last year, it just felt like for Kyle that it was tough, and it was like he wanted to play so bad, and you saw that, and it was just kind of came out of nowhere. It was one of those where it was quiet and it was no nonsense, get it done. And I think that's good just to see that sort of efficiency in business, because that's sometimes one of those where if it doesn't work out, if you can get around it with a good mix of, you know, just being efficient like they were with Gressel and Caicedo. But also in Gressel's situation, show a bit more of a humane side, to that. I think that's good. And that's the sort of business you want with the Whitecaps when they are moving on from players. Because sometimes there have been moments. I mean, everyone's always going to be scarred over Camilo, but even just some of the other departures where it just never quite feels right, right? Even be either because of what it means or who's not coming in, et cetera, et cetera. And it was, for, as far as moves like that go, no complaints.
Okay, we'll round out this deadline day discussion with a bit of a game here, and something that someone asked us when we put out a call for questions, which is, you know, what's the potential, what's the ceiling, what's our new prediction for the Vancouver Whitecaps this season? Alex, I think I said sixth or seventh prior to the start of 2023. You've been talking about how you think this team has in its, you know, first half of the season iteration has top four potential. How has that shifted now? Where, you know, are we in a significantly different place than we were a week, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I feel like it's interesting to say because, yeah, you lose Gressel, someone that certainly hurt your ceiling. But I think what was nice with the Gressel departure is that even before anyone was brought in, there was kind of a ready-made replacement because the Whitecaps did run it. What they've been preferred this year has been Gressel, Kubas, Schopf. Okay, if you assume they keep that, and as we've seen, Vite has arguably been a better version of Schopf anyways, but even removing that from the discussion is that Ali Ahmed, if you look at the numbers, has the statistical profile to at least fill the shoes of Gressel. As you know, Caleb Wilkins, shout out Caleb as always, what he did highlighted in his you know, one of his recent articles for the third sub, there's not a Gressel replacement. It's just not the same, you know, player, so to speak. But Ahmed does certainly bring a lot of different skills as well that Gressel doesn't have. You know, maybe a bit more dribbling, a bit more of that box arriving through with the ball at feet, whereas Gressel like loves to combine, love to, you know, receive balls in the box and at the edge of the area. So the nice thing is you line up an Ahmed replacement so the Gressel departure doesn't hurt as much. And then the fact that you upgrade two of your biggest positions in need and really just stable out your back overall 11, pardon me. So for me, yeah, I think this top four remains the goal just because it's so tight in the West. Like there's really no excuse, especially given the moves the Whitecaps made, because yeah, everyone around them is making move, but at the same time, like there's not any other team that was, you know, making significant tweaks, so to speak, right? Like even like a team in front of them, like Seattle made no moves. LAFC, I mean, they're going to be hard to reach, but they made a few nice moves. RSL bringing in Arango, Austin, like again, you look at what's in front of them, like it's just so achievable. And of course, now the big if, can they win on the road? They're gonna have to with seven road games in a row. But also, I think the fact that they added a bit of experience, a bit of two players who for Canada, for example, were very key prominent roles when Canada broke some, went on the road and played and got some key results. I think for the Whitecaps, top four has to be the goal. They're currently 5 points off top four. They have two games in hand on the teams in fourth and third as well. So say they win both of those games in hand, they could actually go as high as second or third, actually, which is wild that they could be tied for third or tied for second with the right results. There's no excuse for the Whitecaps to not at least be pushing top four. And that's huge because it gives you the home field advantage in that first round to potentially play two games at home with the weird best of three. That would also likely give you an advantage of the next round when it goes back to single elimination, also having that game at home and just overall give you better odds in the playoffs. So I'd say this ceiling, the fact that arguably they've upgraded the roster from where they were a few weeks ago, you look at the situation in the West, this should be a top four team at the end of the season. And it's going to be up to them to go prove that. They're also, another stat worth looking at is they actually have the third best goal difference in the West. That's a team that over the course of the year, they're getting more goals than they're conceding, as the advanced numbers showing. They're doing very well in the expected goals category. It's okay. Everything's lined up for them. It's just, can they actually get it done?
Yeah, I'm very much in line with you in that respect. I mean, they're fifth in terms of, you know, points per game in the West. And really, you look at, you know, okay, St. Louis, LAFC, Seattle, those are heavy hitters. RSL, you know, they've only got a plus one goal difference. It's been kind of high variance. They've been on the right end of some results. You know, I think that Vancouver could easily slot into that third or fourth position in the West. But as you mentioned, they've got to have a good road trip. That's absolutely crucial. And yeah, I mean, they could be, it's funny because it kind of seems like what I'm predicting and what their ceiling is kind of the same. Or, you know, I don't see them overtaking St. Louis or LAFC, but it feels like in terms of the standings, they could be as high as third and compete with any team in MLS, really. So, you know, can they secure a good playoff position? And then I think, you know, can you win a round, a couple rounds? Can you win some home playoff matches? That would be huge for this season. And then I think really, you know, line things up for like a full-blooded MLS Cup push next season. I think that's kind of, you know, you want to get some experience under your belt here and start building something very serious. And hey, maybe if things really take off at the end of the season, they're closer to that this year than we even think right now.
Yeah, so I think it'll be interesting to see, because I think, again, as we've said for a while, it's kind of all lined up, and now you've made the moves to, you know, match that ambition. Well, then it's really time to go prove it, and especially win those games in hand, win some games on the road. It would be absolutely, just massive. And again, the playoff, I think for me, it's the playoff implications. Because really, like, if it's the Whitecaps are heading in the playoffs as a seventh seed, it's hard to imagine them making it further than it's farther than top four in the West. Maybe they win a first round just because with the weird three-game format, they would draw in the first, or no, can you even draw with this weird format? I don't even know. I don't even think you can, because it's like you can only win. But say they scratch out a greasy, grindy first, you know, game road win, then they win at home and then they advance. But then in a bunch of single game road elimination games, it's hard to imagine you making a run. But all of a sudden, if you finish third, fourth, like, you could easily go on a run, especially knowing MLS, like, as we've seen the last few years, being a number one or two seed isn't easy. We've seen a lot of them get knocked out, right? Like, a lot of the recent MLS Cup finals have usually been, I mean, last year was the exception that the two top teams made it. Cause other than that, it's usually like the third, fourth team in each conference kind of makes a run. Cause you kind of get that mix of being able to play your home games and have, maybe you're in better form than the number one or number two team who lock up a spot so early that they're kind of in cruise control and it kind of messes with their rhythm. Whereas the number three, number four team, you have to fight a little more to get in. You're in better form heading into the playoffs. So no, I think it's something, if you want the Whitecaps to have any sort of shot at MLS Cup, I think they would, I would have to see them in a three or four seed. And hey, I think what's nice about that as well is that if they're finishing third or fourth, they're winning games on the road, and, you know, you'd be more confident, say they get, you know, and they make it to a final four, final two, and they're faced up against a one or two seed on the road, you'd almost have a bit more confidence in them as well if they're even in a third or fourth seed in the first place. So yeah, I think it's something where it's set up so nicely to them, for them.
All right. Well, I think that rounds out the transfer news discussion portion of this podcast. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back, opening up the discussion a little more wide ranging on the back end right after this.
All right, we're back after a bit of a break, and speaking of breaks, League's Cup break, we're going to keep calling that, because, I mean, again, I don't know about you, Sam, it feels like a break. It's so wrong to be checking my phone, and there's all this going on, especially sometimes you get the foot mob alerts from Canadians doing, like, oh, Schaffelberg got two assists against Toluca, Nashville versus Toluca, what the heck, oh, yeah, League's Cup, or, you know, to be fair, there's been some phenomenal storylines. I mean, just watching Lionel Messi play has just been an art to see how he's been handling the MLS defenses, and, you know, Sergio Busquets just laughing at the, you know, that's how teams press him. And even otherwise, like, shout out to Austin FC, potentially the worst team in history against non-MLS opposition, in the sense that their Champions League debut, they got, they beat by a, you know, the Haitian side, Violette, who hadn't played in a half a year, and they follow that up by going into a group with, what was it, Mazatlan and Juarez, or, like, literally two of the last, I think two of the three last place teams in Mexico last year, and somehow exiting despite playing both games at home. So shout out to Austin FC for that remarkable, like, I think it's funny too, because, like, Juarez makes it up that group, plays LAFC, gets destroyed, like, 7-1. I don't know, something about that all was just very funny. So shout out for Austin for providing some of that entertainment, so to speak, in terms of their parts. Yeah, Mazatlan and Juarez, what a group that was. But yes, the Whitecaps League Cup, to not dive too much in the other League's Cup, not bad overall. I think it was two, you know, decent showings. I think ultimately you learn some things, which is key. Nice to see them go up against Lyon, the defending Champions League, Champions Cup winners. I guess we can say defending Champions League, because that's what they won. They didn't win the Champions Cup. That hasn't happened yet. They held their own. Sergio Cordova got a brace, which was fantastic. Ryan Gauld looking phenomenal. Then you got the never-ending penalty show, which was a funny storyline, if not anything. So I think that was good for the Whitecaps, because that was relatively full strength. And then for them to go on the road and win, wasn't the prettiest game, wasn't their best performance, but nice to see them grit their teeth. It's great to see Isaac Bomer and Kerifa Yao get extended cameos. I mean, that's always something we kind of wanted from League's Cup. And yeah, maybe it was a bit forced, but it's still something you're not going to complain about. And in the end, they show a bit of grit, a bit of resilience, and that's what they're going to need on the road in this road stretch we talk about. It's not going to always be pretty, but the fact they were down 1-0, they just made it happen with the late comeback. And all of a sudden keeps their League's Cup adventure alive. And I think that's anything from this point on is gravy. It's free chance for fitness, free chance to look at guys, free chance to build chemistry. Be interested to see what the squad looks like for Tigres, right? Like, are you going to be able to get any of Larrea or Adekugbe? Are they going to have to wait for August 20th for their debut? Or if you win, then August 6th to 8th. But yeah, it's bonus, a chance to measure yourself against one of the, if not, I'd argue the top team in CONCACAF. At least from over the last 5 years, it's going to be another good measuring stick. And hopefully at the very least, they compete well and make the most of what this tournament should have been for a team like the Whitecaps, who already made the Champions League, Champions Cup for next year, just to get fitness, to test things out and to show that they can compete.
Yeah, I'll run through this stuff quickly. The first thing I want to mention, the easily the most important thing, is what do you think about the Apple TV League's Cup theme? I've been absolutely vibing with the theme music that they have for the coverage. I've really enjoyed it. So
I'd say yeah. No, I think it's a little less monotonous, say, than the MLS one, where it's just like it's kind of like, okay, what's
it provides a different feeling, a different ambiance, which I think is, and it's not too serious, which I think sort of fits the nature of this competition. Yeah, looking at the two, moving beyond the music, looking at the last two matches, I think the thing that stood out to me against Leon was the way they got a little overwhelmed in the first half by the high pressing, the high motor style that Leon plays, but they were able to make tactical adjustments, and they were really able to give Leon some trouble to start the second half and kind of get them on the back foot a bit, which I think was impressive, shows the growth of MLS and the Vancouver Whitecaps in comparison to some of these top Liga MX teams. And then, as you mentioned, down in LA, just, ultimate road grit performance. It was ugly. There was some squad rotation. A guy like Kerifa Yao held up well in a big spot where things could have been ugly if it had gone the other way. And they just found a way to get it across the line. It was not pretty, but that's the kind of thing they're going to need on that 7-match road trip, right? So that was encouraging. And then in terms of Tigres upcoming here, which depending on when you're listening to the podcast, might be before, might be after, still a very strong team. I think the thing that stands out to me a little bit is that it's a lot of the same heavy hitters as 2017. Like, their core really hasn't changed all that much. Gignac, Quinones, the goalkeeper whose crazy hairdo always stands out to me. His name is eluding me at the moment. But yeah, they've got five or six starters essentially from that 2017 team. And really, the average squad age is up there, but obviously these guys are proven winners, have played in a lot of big matches on big stages against really good competition. So that's a force to be reckoned with. But the Whitecaps in a one-off match at home against a team that doesn't completely overwhelm them in terms of quality in the way that team did 5+ years ago, I think they stand a decent chance of going through. And ultimately for the Whitecaps, like, it's kind of at this point, they made it out of the group stage. I think that's what they wanted to do. It's kind of neither here nor there whether they make it any further, other than maybe you'd like, if Richie Larrea and Sam Adekugbe are not available for this one, which I think would be maybe a bit of a stretch to expect them to play, you might like one extra League's Cup match just to try them out before you go back to MLS play. But beyond that, It's hard to act like this is of terrible consequence, but a win against Tigres would be just kind of nice to, like, you know, avenge the ghosts of 2017. So I think that that's an interesting angle, and certainly it's going to be fun to watch, even if it's not like the most consequential match of all time.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I feel. Like, it's just fun. Like, it's like really no stakes, not like a Champions League win or die. Like, it's just kind of like you got to play Tigres, you win, you keep going. If you lose, then like, so be it. They might you know, want it more than you do or something like that. But yeah, I think it's
Alex, I just saw this come across my desk. I don't know if you knew about this already. Our boy Vasco Fry on loan to Vancouver FC.
Oh yeah, I heard about that one in the rumblings for a few weeks.
Absolutely love that for Vasco. That's awesome. I like to see him get a shot at the CPL level. That'd be cool.
Our adopted Canadian, right? Remember when he came in as a, you know, Peruvian around what, 2017, and now he's hustled, played at CapU, etc. So shout out to Vasco Fry. I mean, he even got that call up to the first team earlier this year. You know, he's been hustling, so hopefully he can go, you know, make a name for himself at Vancouver FC. That's some good news for him. And interesting, it's on loan. I wondered if it might have been a permanent deal just to, you know, let him build something there, but I guess maybe the Whitecaps see something in him. But yeah, interesting. As for League's Cup to return, yes, that's all I have to say. It's bonus. Really, my big question mark is, what's the lineup look like, and how fit are Adekugbe and Larea? The nice thing is, Adekugbe, maybe his fitness might be a bit lower because he's not in season, but he headed back to Italy, was participating in Hattaspor's preseason camp. I don't know why that word was eluding me. Not sure if he played or not. He was featuring on the bench in one of the one friendly they played. So hopefully that will at least get him up to a decent speed, and then they can spend most of this next month gearing him up for August 20th, which is nice that you have that break. And then Larea should be in form, right? He's been in MLS for most of the season, then went to the Gold Cup. And I imagine, because by the time the Gold Cup was done, he was no longer a TFC player, but Forrest have started their preseason. I have no idea if he went with them for preseason. So if so, great. If not, I mean, if he was training individually, I mean, you'd have to imagine he's a lot closer to full fitness, and you know, only a few weeks will take that. So, hey, shout out to MLS for one time. Yes, this League's Cup break is done, but it is useful if you need new signings and you need time to embed them in, because now you don't have any MLS games for 3 weeks. So hopefully that can be what Larea needs to get up to 90-minute fitness, and maybe for someone like Adekugbe, at the very least, get him up to 60 to 90. But knowing how fit Adekugbe is, another thing. Whitecaps fans, when Adekugbe left, he had that injury prone tag because he suffered a few injuries. He does not miss many games now these days, and he's a 90-minute man on most of them. So I can't imagine he's very far away from that, given that's kind of been his standard. Even though, yeah, he didn't play as much at Galatasaray this year, you still imagine he isn't that far from that 90-minute standard.
Absolutely. Okay, now to the around BC and the around the world portion, just to finish off the show here. Pacific back in the win column in convincing fashion. That was good to see after they've been struggling a lot recently. We mentioned Vancouver FC. We talked about some of the additions. Shout out to Mike Rice, who did a great article on the Third Sub, outlining kind of new look Vancouver FC and maybe what a little bit of what we could expect going forward. But unfortunately, for the Eagles, for the Langley team, still struggling, still just looking to find some consistency and a bit of direction with those new players. So, Alex, your thoughts maybe on the contrasting form of the two BC CPL sides?
Yeah, I mean, credit to Pacific. They're in a bit of a rut, 5 games without a win, but with top spot, having lost top spot, they did well to regain it. Dominant performance over Valor. Intrigued to see if they can build off that. I think for Pacific, really, it's just how well they defend. Because I think, look, as a team, you're going to go through ebbs and flows with goal scoring. That's just the nature of the game. Pretty much every team in the league has had a slump of some sorts in front of goal. Really, I think the bigger factor behind Pacific's slump was their defense. But they've found their form a bit again. So can they keep that up? If they do, they'll be flying. They just have too much firepower and attack to be kept quiet very often. They lead the lead in goal in goals for a reason. They've had like four plus three goal or more outbursts for a reason. They'll be flying. As for Vancouver, it's going to be a tough. Like it felt like if they needed a win from one of their last two games to really keep the playoff hopes alive. And technically, yeah, they're alive just because you still play everyone, but it's on life support. It's something where they're going to need to really, I think for now, it's just capture form, try to build something for next year, kind of build out your core, really figure out who you want to keep around. Because I think they've done well to build, you know, a good core of 5 to 7 guys. And we have to remember Caden Cheung hasn't even been healthy and he's finally training with the team again. And that'll be almost like another signing as well. So really figure out what your core, what your identity is and focus on next year. And hey, if you do by some miracle, make a late run, because it is the CPL, we've seen a few teams do at least push in recent years where you make a late run, like York and Valor did last year, et cetera. But really for them, the focus will likely pivot to 2024. And that's not a bad thing, right? The expansion year was always about growing pains, about figuring things out. And ultimately, if anything, it feels like they showed a bit more than some were expecting from them at times as an expansion team. It's just they also, you know, struggle with inconsistency, but no expansion team was ever going to not struggle with that.
Well, moving from the CPL to League One BC, it's crazy, Alex. League One BC season already coming to a close. It's been fast and furious, but we've still got two more very exciting matches to look forward to. Saturday at BC Place, a soccer extravaganza. You've got the women's final at 1 o'clock Pacific, Vancouver Whitecaps Elite versus Unity. And then at 4 p.m., the men's final, the Highlanders against the Vancouver Whitecaps Academy. So as you mentioned right off the top of the show, it's been a good couple of weeks for the Whitecaps Academy teams, certainly punching at or above their weight, getting to the finals in both sides of the competition. And the Highlanders on the men's side already having secured that Canadian championship spot. Can they get a playoff, a finals win as well? Will be really interesting to see. Looking forward to that, even from afar. Super hyped it would be selfishly a little bit. It would be great to see Unity and the Highlanders come out on top just to, you know, infuse some of the smaller, obviously the Highlanders long established, but like Unity, the way they've come up this year on the women's side, it's been really awesome to see a relatively new entrant. And so, just hoping for entertaining football on Saturday, and it'll be fun regardless of who comes out on top.
Yeah. And it's special that they're at BC Place, right? Like almost like a Wembley of sorts. I think that's going to be cool. Hopefully you get a decent crowd for that. Tickets are cheap. So if you're looking for some Saturday sunny soccer, local soccer, go out to BC Place. I think it's $20 for like both games. Like that's a steal for BC Place, watching soccer at BC Place, supporting the grassroots game. And yeah, I mean, just both divisions so fascinating. I think the women's one, it was always going to be Whitecaps, Knots and Water Unity, because it kind of turned into a three-horse race. But credit to the Rovers, they pushed the Whitecaps, ended up falling 5-2, and they, you know, Rovers actually scored the first goal in that game. But Whitecaps just so dominant, and I think they're the favorites to win, right? Like they won last year, they won the league this year, they're going to the interprovincial championships next week. Like this is their tournament, or this their final to lose. But Unity, I was impressed. I watched Unity Knotsamont were the favorites. Unity completely stifled them, came out in this 3-4-3, just completely the press. It was remarkable. Knotsamont usually so good offensively, could barely string anything together. Unity stormed out to a 4-0 lead. Knotsamont slotted one back to make it 4-1. So that was also just a dominant performance by Unity, and they're going to need that because this Whitecaps team can score, and it can score in bunches. So they're going to need that 3-4-3 to be solid to have any chance. So it'll be interesting to see there. The men's one will be a bit more open. I think the Highlanders are the favorites, of course. They won the league. But it always felt like it was going to be Highlanders Rovers, and the Rovers were a bit reeling with injuries. You know, they lost some key players to SFU as well, which hurts just because the SFU season's starting. That kind of, yeah, they got demolished by the Whitecaps. I think it was 4-0 in the end. So Whitecaps looking to build off that form and show that, because they've been a team that's been building all year long and growing, and were kind of a late pusher in and helped them also secure the Juan de Fuca plate. So, you know, can they help the Whitecaps complete the treble, because last year we thought, could it be not somewhat at the time varsity won the Juan de Fuca plate, had two finalists, but fell short in both. The Whitecaps are going to hope for better fortunes this time around. And on the men's side, they're certainly going to be tough against the Highlanders, who are just so solid defensively. I've had a chance to watch them a few times, and they're just so, like, they're just so gritty. And I say that with a compliment, in the sense that they just know how to get a timely goal or two, and then just they defend. It's an art the way they defend. I say that's it's a compliment in the way that their grit and their resilience holds on. So for the Whitecaps team, who scored four against the Rovers, they'll be in tough to repeat that against this Highlanders team. But the beauty of a final is that anything can happen. We saw it last year. It felt like varsity were going to run over everyone after how dominant they were in the regular season. Then the Whitecaps women surprised them, and then the Rovers men surprised them. So might we see something similar this time around with the Whitecaps heading in, arguably as a bit of the favorites overall to leave with trophies, but certainly the Highlanders will have something to say about that, as will Unity.
Okay, final note here to wrap up the show. We encourage you, as always, you know, if you want in-depth Canadian soccer coverage, go check out the Northern Football Podcast, which obviously Alex is a co-host of. But Alex, we haven't really chatted about it. So just in bullet points, or as in a paragraph, as briefly as you can summarize your thoughts on the demise, the exit of the Canadian women's national team at the group stage of the Women's World Cup. Well, what went wrong, plainly put?
Just the, you know, ultimately the sport is changing, the level is increasing. And for Canada, they just, you know, a lot of factors behind their, you know, their struggles, from injuries to, you know, federation, but also they didn't do themselves favors tactically. They didn't do favors with squads or player selection. And ultimately the game is changing and Canada wasn't able to keep up. And look, I think you can take solace in the fact of a Canadian fan that they're not the only team to suffer this. The U.S. has looked awful all tournament, despite having arguably the most talented team. Germany exited at the hands of Colombia and Morocco. I mean, Colombia and Morocco have been excellent and so fun to watch this tournament, but it was a big surprise because Germany washed Morocco 6-0 in their first game. So to end up finishing below Morocco is a surprise, but the game's changing, right? Even South Africa, Italy in 2019 won their group, and you know, we're heading into this tournament looking to build off that. South Africa, you know, surprise them, and it shows that the level is just changing. It's so much more even tactically, talent wise. So for teams like Canada, it's not as much to be able to just rely on individual skill so much. If they're going to want to compete at the next World Cup and, you know, next year's Olympics, they really got to find a way to take a step forward tactically and get more out of their players, because that's the sort of game it is now. For so long, that's kind of why the U.S. were so dominant. Yes, they're always well coached and they're tactically well, but I think, for example, under Vlatko Ananoski, they haven't been so good tactically, and now they're starting to pay for that, whereas teams can expose them, can attack you in different ways, and Canada unfortunately faced the brunt of that.
Yeah, I mean, I would co-sign that. I think that, you know, the game has shifted dramatically, and unfortunately I think we're seeing a bit of the cost too of, like, in a way, winning Olympic gold maybe gave Canada a false sense of hope, or too high of an expectation of, like, what their baseline was going into this tournament. Because with the departure of John Herdman, bringing in Bev Priestman, like, thinking back prior to that Olympics, things weren't, like, supposed to go super well right away. It was supposed to be a building process, transitioning out Christine St. Clair and the old guard, and bringing up young players and creating a new identity. And then it felt like with the Olympics that kind of put that on hold, or they just never really addressed it, and then they paid for it at this Women's World Cup. So ultimately, yes, does the CSA stuff make this transition process all the more difficult? Absolutely. But I feel like even without any of this federation stuff, like, this team just was not ready, did not make the adjustments, have not evolved the way they needed to, as the rest of the world has caught up to North America and Western Europe in terms of, like, women's soccer development, maybe not fully caught up. And part of that is scary because, like, this is just, we're seeing these other programs emerge and they're only starting to figure it out. So Canada has to find a new way to to build their squad, right? Like it so long, it's been about just being bulletproof defensively and grinding things out. And Christine St. Clair has a moment of brilliance. Jeanne Brecky more recently finds a way to get it done. Or just having like one player stand out and kind of find a way to get it across the finish line in extra time and penalties. They can't live that way anymore. We saw it at this tournament. And so I think it's a good wake-up call, honestly. Like now you've got a good runway. You've got 17, 18, 19-year-olds on the come up that are going to be part of the next cycle. So it's time to start thinking and building around that. In addition to players like Julia Grosso and Jordan Hoidema are going to be veteran on the women's national team going into the next World Cup. So, I think it's exciting that the women's team starting to build in like a new direction for a new generation. That's going to be cool to see it when it happens, but it's obviously tough to see how difficult that transition process is going to be.
Well, that's it. It's never easy, but ultimately I think the big takeaway is that it was learning lessons, right? Like this is just a gut check, a gut punch. Canada's not the only team going through it, but it's how do you come up from this, right? Like it also shows the importance of building a league. Teams that countries that have leagues are prospering from the depth it provides. And yeah, there's just so much for Canada to take away from this, from that to their tactics, to their squad. Just even as well, like for example, the way thing with Canada this tournament, they didn't really modernize their tactics from before, like you mentioned. They didn't, you know, really ease in their new generation. This is a young players tournament. A lot of these teams that are thriving are doing so also off the back of your young players. It's been the tournament for players like Alinda Caicedo from Colombia, right? Just 18 and has been remarkable. And it's just so many stories like that. So for Canada, it also shows where the game is heading. It's a younger game. It's a more tactical game. And it's a game where you're going to need a deeper player pool. And now it's up to them to address those three key needs. And that comes down to a league, that comes down to tactics, that comes down to squad selection. So excited to see where they go from here. Cause I think sometimes a moment like this can also serve as a bit of a wake up call, but also it can be scary to see all the progress around the world. So hopefully Canada can keep up. There are some good things happening here, but it's also important to capitalize and accelerate some of that growth.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hoping for better times on the women's side, but seems like better times are here, hopefully, for the Vancouver Whitecaps with some of the additions they've made. Looking forward to the League One BC finals this Saturday. And we'll continue to monitor Pacific and Vancouver FC the rest of the season. Alex, this has been a great show. It's fun when we have this kind of stuff to talk about and reasons to get hyped about the future of the Vancouver Whitecaps. So been a pleasure as always. You can find me at Samuel_Robot on Twitter at thethirdsub.ca. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, interact on Threads if that's what you're into. The changing face of social media, every day it seems like something new is dropping, but nonetheless, interact with us, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. And Alex, over to you to sign off.
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at AlexGungyRuzik, at Threads/Instagram at AJ on the case. Although Threads, I'll mask and just bring some of those new features, and then we'll flock over. Because I don't know. And I'm not calling it X, by the way, with Twitter, Elon. That's just not happening. That sounds a bit that sounds a bit too ambiguous in terms of what kind of group you're aligning yourself with that sort of name. But that aside, that's where you can find me, all the work, lots of World Cup, lots of League One, lots of CPL, lots of all that good stuff. Of course, some White Caps. I'm looking forward. It's a huge weekend, really. Like I'm loving this weekend. You got Leagues Cup on Friday, you got League One BC on Saturday, and you got Vancouver FC on Sunday if you're in the Vancouver area. So not a bad weekend at all. I will try my best to make it out to all three, and I can't wait. And excited just to see what comes with this new era of Whitecaps and everything. But on that note, we'll see you again soon for episode 174, where we won't be talking about new Whitecaps transfers, at least certainly not of this magnitude, maybe a new signing between now and then, but certainly exciting to see what the future looks like on all those fronts.